This is Deanna Spingola. It is Tuesday, February 5th, 2013, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is J. Bruce Campbell. His website is jbcampbellextremismonline.com. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Deanna. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's always nice to talk with you. Of course, I listen to your interviews with Dr. Carly and always enjoy what you have to say. And you recently hosted a meeting where, about 100 people attended that you sponsored or you convened?
Yeah, it was just a last-minute kind of an idea to have a meeting on gun control in our county here in Idaho. And we only had about 3 days notice, advance notice for these people. But it was an amazing turnout for a little county like this. We got about 100 people there, including the sheriff and the deputy.
I mean, that's fabulous.
It was.
Amazing.
And you can see by the text of the of most of my remarks I have sent to you, or you have them. But I started out talking about Brandon Robb, because as I explained to the people there, I said, I think about Brandon Robb every day, usually when I wake up in the morning. It's probably one of the most horrifying stories I've heard in this country, even though it had a happy ending. It was terrifying, I'm sure, for him. If you haven't told your audience about him, he was a ex-Marine, about 26 years old, had a tour of duty in Afghanistan and a tour in Iraq. And he's not in the Marines anymore. He's just a young entrepreneur in Richmond, Virginia area. He lives in Chesterfield County. And he was kind of playing around on Facebook with his brother and his sister, talking about 9/11, that maybe the government knew about it or whatever. He had some rock and roll lyrics that they reproduced. And, you know, some very mildly provocative statements, I understand. Nothing illegal, but still, one day he was barbecuing, wearing his shorts and no shoes, no shirt, and some cars came rolling into his driveway. Turned out to be Secret Service, FBI, maybe the Marshals, I'm not sure, and local cops. Went to the door to see what they wanted, and FBI said, well, Brandon, we're worried about you. He said, really? Yeah, you know, what you've been saying on Facebook. And now this Facebook thing was I don't think about Facebook, but it wasn't open to the public. It was just between him and his brother and sister and maybe his mother and maybe some friends, but
I think all Facebooks are really CIA. It's a CIA op, and whether it's somebody's looking in on it, obviously.
Right. Well, the FBI was looking in on it, and said, "Brandon, we're worried about you." And so I guess he spent about a minute trying to explain himself, you know, naively. The local cops got impatient, knocked him down, put the cuffs on him. Stuffed him in a squad car. Last thing the FBI says, Brandon, you're not under arrest. We're just worried about you. And off he went to the VA psych ward in Richmond.
Oh, man.
And for a 15-minute psych evaluation by some quack, who then said he needed a 30-day psych evaluation. Luckily, his mother started raising hell on Facebook, in the public part of it. And some veterans saw that and went to John Whitehead, the Rutherford Institute, civil rights law firm in Virginia. And he got involved immediately. But it still took him 5 days to get any action out of a judge. Finally found a judge who signed a court order to release him. But by that time, Brandon had been transferred to the VA psych ward in Roanoke, about 4 hours to the west, away from his family and his attorneys. And while this was happening, I think on the last day, captivity, the psychiatrist came into his cell and sat down, said, Brandon, I'm going to brainwash you. Brandon said, you're what? I'm going to medicate you forcibly. Now, during the meeting, I said, this to me means a chemical lobotomy.
Yeah.
Somebody took issue with that. I don't know why. I mean, if a psychiatrist says to you words brainwash forcibly and medicate, what else can we, you know, think about that?
Sure.
Luckily, the court order got to the psych department before this could happen, and he was released. But while these 5 days were going on, some veterans, the ones that approached Whitehead, and a journalist approached him again and said, you know, this is a lot worse than you think. He said, what do you mean? Well, he said, I've been investigating this, and I found that approximately 20,000 men and women every year in Virginia alone are taken for this, what they call a civil commitment. It's not an arrest, but they're forced to take a psych evaluation. Some of them are released, but some of them are not. So then he found out that Brandon was the 20th person in Chesterfield County, and that was by August 16th of last year. He was the 20th person in his county to be taken away in that month, and the month was only half over. So obviously Whitehead said, you know, this is, in my 40 years of this kind of work representing people, this is the worst case I have ever encountered, because it's so frightening. You can just disappear now. See, I was on a show last month, I guess it was, and Dennis Fecho, and he listened to all of my other, you know, ideas about revolution and so forth. And at the end of the show, he said, well, Bruce, I understand what you're saying, but I think you're premature. Huh. I said, premature? Yeah, I just don't think it's called for. You know, what you're saying, I don't think it's called for yet. So luckily, my wife could, Robbie could hear him, and she scribbled a note saying, Brandon Robb. Boy, that was a great idea. So
yeah,
I said, okay, Dennis, I want to talk to you about Brandon Robb. And I told that same story to him, and he was speechless. He said, well, maybe you're not premature after all.
Yeah. I mean, if they can do that to you, or if they can do take rendition flights and fly people to Diego Garcia, which a lot of people don't even know about, and if they can do something to you right there in your own county, your own state, without anybody putting up any opposition, oh, my goodness. Amazing.
So that's what's in store for us, and that's why I'm saying we have to be ready to fight to the death at the drop of a hat. We fight like wildcats, because this is what we're looking at. Unfortunately, you know, this is a position they put us in now. If 20,000 people a year in just one state are being taken away, and let's say 3/4 of them are released, but maybe not. We don't really know.
And under what condition are they released? So they're mindless robots?
Exactly. So we've got a serious problem, and we just have to be, we got to jack up our ideas and get ready to fight these guys. I don't know what else to say.
Right. And it seems like they are targeting military or ex-military.
That's what I forgot to say. This is a journalist was talking to John Whitehead. He said most of these people that they're picking up are vets. So, you know, we know that they consider vets the number one terrorist problem now.
Right, because they come home and they've been trained to kill foreigners, and now they've been overseas and they know what's going on over there, that we're not really fighting for our freedom, but we're just killing, people to to protect the resources of the corporations over there. So this group of people could be a problem to them, and I think that they are trying to get rid of them.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And now we've had an actual drone situation here where we live. We had some, you know, we have people here in the valley that are preppers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one of the top prepper guys and his wife over for dinner the night before this gun control meeting. And he said, hey, two of your neighbors saw the drone that day. I said, really? Now, what happened here at the house, my wife and I were upstairs in this office, and this was back in August. We didn't have the blinds on this big window in the office, and the lower part of it was open. So we could both hear this noise outside the window. It was dark. It was kind of going vit, 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 like that.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say anything. She just got up and went to the window to listen to it. And it did it a couple more times while she was there. And then it disappeared. It went away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next day I had to leave for work in another state. And she became very ill. Couldn't even get off the couch. Couldn't go to the doctor. And had terrible pain in her lungs and chest. So I said, well, you've got to get to your doctor. She says, I can't even get off the couch. But eventually she did go to the doctor. And the first doctor had no clue. She went to one over the mountains. And it was a doctor that she'd actually trained, because Robbie was a doctor too.
Right.
Turns out that her doctor over the other side of the mountains is somebody she trained years ago in Arizona. That was kind of a shock. But he said, well, you have a chemical burn in your lungs. Any idea how you got it? She said, I have no idea. At that point, we didn't really put this together with the visit.
Mm-hmm.
But more we thought about it, she said, well, you know, this happened like the next day after that thing was outside the window. Anyway, she had to have a high frequency CT scan, because the x-ray showed nothing and the CT scan shows scarring of the lungs. Now, she's had perfect health for 17 years until one day it's just total pain and debilitation. I mean, it's totally debilitated. So anyway, this guy said, people saw the drone. I said, well, it was here at nighttime. Well, they saw it. I saw it near your house in the daytime, too.
Really?
And it came over their houses. Holy criminy. So suspicions kind of confirmed on that. I'm not saying the drone did it, but it could have been in connection with it.
Right. I mean, if she's had perfect health, then she's not been exposed to any chemical, inhaling any chemical or anything. I mean, it seems like cause and effect to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So these things are happening in this country, and we just have to get with the new America.
Right. Yeah.
And respond to it. We got to respond. We have to fight. We have to be ready to fight at the drop of a hat. FBI has heard me say that, and they've been complaining that there is this attitude now in the country of fighting at the drop of a hat. Well, that's good.
Well, if anybody reads Solzhenitsyn, they should have been prepared in Russia, but they just could not conceive of this kind of a thing happening to them. And we're even worse here in America. People are so brainwashed here. They think that they still have freedom of speech and freedom of this and freedom of that. When in fact, the current occupant of the White House is making a trip throughout the country promoting the ban on guns. That's got to be a little bit alarming for people who who really take seriously the Second Amendment, which is the right to bear arms. Not firearms, but arms.
Right. Well, we're in the hands of, they're definitely, they've got a communist mentality, and people don't really appreciate what the communists do when they're in power.
Right. They don't get it. They just think it's all the left and the right. It's just those darn Democrats and the Republicans are just fighting it out, duking it among. This is not about Democrats and Republicans. We have been communized. And we've been communized for a very long time. And it's time that we recognize this and understand what's happening to us. And you can include, well, going back to the Rob story, think about how it's going to be after Obamacare takes effect. They're going to be able to take all kinds of people in for these chemical lobotomies. No questions asked. They're just going to do it.
Yeah. You know, 20,000 a year just in Virginia. You wonder about the other states. What's going on? Just how bad is it?
Sure.
So.
Amazing. Well, so this sheriff got up and denounced you and he walked out?
Yeah, he read a statement from some sheriff's organization. I'm not sure if it was for the state of Idaho or national. I couldn't even quite grasp what he was saying, but he was seething with anger. And he said, you know, I just can't believe what I've heard. If I have a warrant signed by a judge, and you know, he just kind of left it at that. But then he just walked out. So I thought maybe he was just saying that he had a warrant signed by a judge in his hand, but no, he was just being hypothetical.
Sure. But I think that was kind of a warning, okay?
Yeah.
I think he was being subtle, but I think he was telling you that he had the capability of doing that. And I think that was kind of a subtle threat. I mean, I'm very suspicious of people, we also recognize that many of the police officers in this country have been trained by Israel, and I don't think that the people in Idaho necessarily, but certainly the ones in New York and other places, and I think that some of that information kind of flows down to other areas, and I know that I know that there's a lot of camaraderie and obedience training within the structure of the police departments in my area. And it's kind of similar to the obedience training that people undergo when they join the military. That they are, you know, the herd mentality really takes over. And about 5 or 6 years ago, my name was on an internet site that people could contact me in order to get information about 9/11. And so I had this gentleman call me, or he emailed me. He stopped by my house. He lives in another county adjacent to mine, and he belongs to, I can't remember whether he was part of the sheriff's department or the police department, but he said he had tried to talk to other people that he works with, his fellow officers, about 9/11, and he says they all thought he was crazy. But he wanted as much information about it as he possibly could get, but there was no way that he could convince other officers that 9/11 wasn't according to the official version, because these people are totally brainwashed. And I mean, it's really difficult when you have groups of people who are brainwashed, who have the authority to carry a gun, and yet you know they're out to get you because you're speaking out.
Yeah, that happened to me today. Even a guy who's a very nice guy, and we were talking about some of this stuff, and. In the office, and he said, "Do you think 9/11 was an inside job?" I said, "Of course." Well, he said, "Then we can't talk anymore. We might as well just stop talking." I said, "Really?" Yeah. That kind of thing really is disturbing. It's somebody, his brother's a cop, so he feels that any doubt or suspicion about the government, of any part of the government, is like heresy. You're unclean. You mustn't ever be associated with such people.
Indeed. Yeah. I've talked to people the same way, and even people in my family don't believe me, and they're not kind about what they think. It's kind of amazing. I don't know whether people don't want to hear about things that they don't know about from people they know, but as you indicated, even strangers don't want to believe what you tell them. So it isn't a matter of whether it's family members or whether it's strangers. They are self-censored. They just don't want to think outside the box because we've all been trained to have obedience for the government. We've all been trained from the time that we entered the government schools to pledge obedience to the government in Washington. And it's very hard to break outside of that mold that they've put us in.
You and I know so darn much about what's happened and what's happening and what's probably going to happen. And you stumble on these benighted ignoramuses, and they're just ignorant. But it's as if you're in the Twilight Zone or you're in a parallel universe. How could they not know something is wrong? How could they be so trusting? It's just shocking.
Indeed. And of course, they have it. It's all around them. The indoctrination is so, it's in everything, in the media, in the entertainment business. I mean, it's just, we had the Super Bowl on for just a few minutes. I watched just a few minutes of it, and then I went back. I just watched it just to see the politicization of this game. And I don't know how many people were in the crowd. I think it's a worldwide event. I mean, people are having parties at their house, and they've got these entertainment and the patriotic music. And this is just it just made me sick. I mean, it was just a pro-war. Everybody puts on a uniform. They run around a football field. They get accolades. They get applause. And it's all kind of a military indoctrination because they mix what people are there. They're to be entertained or to watch a bunch of people work, run around with a football or whatever. And they are really being indoctrinated to be pro-war without even recognizing it. And music has such an ability to touch your soul that even if you know what the music is about and the motivation behind the people that are playing this music, even if you know, just because you've heard it growing up in school and you've sung the Star Spangled Banner and that kind of thing, you still get that just a little bit of a feeling inside, even if you know what they're doing. So it is very, very difficult, I think, to break out of this indoctrination that we've all been subject to. But it's an absolute essential that we do.
It is. I heard that they used some of the children from
Oh
Sandy Hook.
yes. Oh gosh.
That's
Sickening.
pretty cold.
It is
Pretty cold.
just ter Oh, talk about orchestration, talk about coordination. With Obama running around the country and these other politicians saying, "Oh, we've got to do something about gun control." I mean, the whole thing is awful. And it happens in other countries too. I interviewed a gentleman earlier that, well, last week, from Finland, and I asked him about the mass shootings there. And of course, we don't hear about them, but I asked him if that country had experienced school shootings, and he said yes, and immediately after the school shootings there, then they confiscated guns and they banned people from having guns for self-protection. I mean, they use the same darn tactics in every single country. And it is because it is an international operation to take guns out of the hands of the citizens.
Yeah. How much time do we have on this
Take your time, whatever. It's not, the program doesn't, you know, it's however long we want to talk.
I see. Well, you know, that thing I wrote and delivered the other night, it was probably the best thing I've written.
Well, why don't you go through it with us?
Okay, because it's pretty hard-hitting, and I think it's pretty pretty current with what's going on.
Absolutely. So go for it.
Yeah, I kind of entitled the whole meeting. I gave an interview in the local paper, what it was going to be about, and I said, well, the keynote would be that gun control is treason. So I said, who is it besides the rabid dogs in the Obama administration that wants us disarmed? Well, the United Nations wants us disarmed. Communist China wants us disarmed. The Israel lobby wants us disarmed. And of course, the Mexican drug cartel wants us disarmed. These are the international gangsters. They have requested, no, they have demanded that the Obama gangsters disarm us. It's quite possible that a belligerent meeting such as this one is what the Obama gangsters want. It's quite possible that we are being pushed and goaded into violent responses to their violent provocations, such as the sadistic police behavior we've seen all over the country. So what? They mean to enslave all of us and kill some of us. We're going to have to fight back sooner or later, regardless of whom it pleases or displeases. It's either fight or start waving the white flag, and I doubt that anyone in here is ever going to wave the white flag. Nope, we'll fight it out and see who wins. I'm pretty sure it's going to be us. There's no doubt that many police departments are encouraged to brutalize us civilians. There's also no denying that many police departments have been trained in Israel or are being trained by visiting Israeli instructors in this country. Anyone can see where this is leading. It's leading to a totalitarian dictatorship, but only if the dictatorship can get us to hand over our guns. So it doesn't matter what the Obama gangsters think they want. What matters is what we want. What matters is what we are going to do about it. We pay the bills and we'll make the decisions. Anyone who's hoping there's a safe, legal, and peaceful way to hold on to his guns is going to be disappointed. Gun control is about who is going to run this country, us or the foreign gangsters. We're not sure, of course, but it's possible that Obama himself is a foreign gangster. We're still waiting on the ID. If it's going to be us, then we need to be ready at the drop of a hat to fight like wildcats. The threat we face ranges from a militarized police takeover of the sheriff's department to the Blackwater-type mercenaries we saw during Katrina, right up to full martial law run by the U.S. Army and or the United Nations. All of these would be run by the CIA front groups such as FEMA and Homeland Security. We've already seen the Army field manuals on occupation and concentration camps for American dissidents. As we've seen from the Vietnam, the Iraq, and Afghanistan disasters, some places cannot be successfully occupied by the U.S. or U.N. military, no matter how hard they try. Some can, such as Japan, South Korea, and West Germany, but some cannot. All thugs and bullies can be beaten because they're mainly into it for the money and the other bennies. It just takes guns and the guts to use them as they were meant to be used. We just need to get it into our heads that Teton County is one county in Idaho that will not be messed with or intimidated, no matter what. As we see day after day, over and over, the gangsters deal in horrific and merciless brutality, mainly overseas, but increasingly here at home. It's called state terror. Neither the Democrats nor the Republicans object to state terror, whether it's mass murder by bombers, or assassination by drones, bombing weddings and funerals, or sadistic grunts kidnapping, torturing, raping, and murdering anyone who might resent American brutality. The list of American terrorism around the world is too long for this meeting. Many of us have suspected that our military men and women have been trained in Iraq and Afghanistan to brutalize civilians over there as a prelude to do the same to civilians over here. This suspicion began with the infamous 45 questions for soldiers and Marines in 1994, and again just last week, with the report that Obama's litmus test for generals keeping their jobs is their willingness to kill American resistors. The authors of American state terror, the politicians and the killers, are the same gangsters who want us to hand over our guns to them. The government knows that America is in an explosive condition, thanks entirely to what the government has been doing to us, especially with 9/11 and its planned tyrannical aftermath known as the War on Terror. It has been waging the War on Terror against foreigners in our name. The government has always planned to attack us Americans, and now it is doing so. The War on Terror included the Patriot Act and the Military Commissions Act and the annual National Defense Authorization Act. The Patriot Act obliterated the Bill of Rights. The Fourth Amendment is no more. The Gang of Nine on the Supreme Court has found no constitutional problem with the Patriot Act or with any tyrannical action of the Bush and Obama gangsters. We are not going to be protected by anyone in any part of the federal, state, or local government. It is up to us to protect ourselves from the tyrants. It has always been up to us, but human nature being what it is, we have trusted our employees to take care of us. That was very bad judgment on our part. It was lazy, it was cowardly, and it was wrong. It is reasonable to expect them to join with us against the federal tyrants, but this is our responsibility. After all, we pay the bills. It is estimated by the government that there are between 300 and 400 million firearms in America today. There are more guns in America than there are cars, and guns don't tend to wear out. The only thing that stands in the way of a declaration of a totalitarian dictatorship by the Obama administration is this massive number of guns in our hands. And there is the historical fact that America came into being as a result of the violent overthrow of a totalitarian dictatorship. It was not done by Americans fighting a foreign enemy. It was done by Englishmen fighting their own English government. When the fighting was over, the English rebels had become Americans. The government knows that it cannot disarm us physically. It is an impossibility. The next best thing is to disarm us mentally, psychologically. As the current Attorney General Holder admitted years ago in a different administration, we need to be brainwashed, that's his word, to give up our guns. I started the militia movement 30 years ago this year to counter the attempt by government to brainwash us to give up our guns. I think the movement was successful, at least to that extent. The militia movement was the biggest, fastest-growing voluntary armed movement in American history. It came out of nowhere at a time much less dangerous than today. It collapsed from the shocking federal massacre at Oklahoma City in 1995. 18 years later, we are mentally much tougher and more sophisticated than we were then. Federal atrocities still shock us, but they no longer make us doubt ourselves or the correctness of our duty. Thanks to the miracle of the internet and thanks to the power-mad overreach of the federal gangsters, millions of heavily armed Americans understand what we are about to experience, which is the naked, violent struggle between the tyrants and the normal people who only want to be left alone. The tyrants cannot leave us alone. They must control us without limit. Violence is the American way. It is our history, and it is our way. The American tendency to violence has been exploited by the government in its genocidal wars against foreigners. The NDAA for last year authorized the arrest and disappearance of Americans in secret with no due process. The NDAA allows federal agents and the military to kidnap, torture, and murder Americans who are considered enemies of the state. Senator Carl Levin revealed last year that these tyrannical licenses to kidnap, torture, and murder us were placed in the NDAA on Obama's insistence. So now we are confronted with another attempt to outlaw assault rifles. Everyone in this room knows what an assault rifle really is. A machine rifle that goes fully automatic and fires an intermediate cartridge. Intermediate means that the brass is shorter and holds less gunpowder and creates a slower bullet velocity than a regular rifle cartridge. Examples are the AK-47, the M-16, and even the old American M-2 carbine. Assault rifle is now a politically motivated term of hatred, an attempt to make the gun owner appear aggressive and homicidal just by owning one. The term comes from the German original Sturmgewehr, or storm rifle, a word coined by Adolf Hitler to describe the first one, the STG-44. I kind of like the word, so I'll use it tonight. Remember, a storm rifle is really not a storm rifle unless it can be fired full auto. We'll just pretend for now that we're talking about storm rifles and not their semi-automatic cousins that are legal to buy unless you live in Connecticut, which brings up another interesting question. We know that the feds aren't against storm rifles for everyone, just us. The president and the other politicians are surrounded by storm rifles and submachine guns for their own protection. It's because they work real good. The president supplies a storm rifle to every soldier and Marine he sends overseas to kill foreigners. Homeland Security just put out a request for bids on 7,000 actual full-auto storm rifles, except when DHS wants some, they are renamed personal defense weapons. In our hands, they are known as assault weapons. We see how that works. The CIA has provided storm rifles and much more to the Al-Qaeda terrorists in Libya and Syria to overthrow those governments. It did the same thing to the Al-Qaeda rebels in Afghanistan in the 80s, where the CIA and Zbigniew Brzezinski actually invented Al-Qaeda. The president and his attorney general have provided thousands of civilian and military storm rifles to the Mexican drug cartels, which they use to kill, reportedly, thousands of Mexicans and even some Americans. Are the Mexicans in the drug cartels our friends or our enemies? The feds are conducting a war on drugs. This war has been a declared war by all presidents and funded by the Congress, going back to Nixon. Can we assume, given that we are waging the war on drugs, that the drug cartel members would be considered our enemies? What is the definition of treason? It is to give aid and comfort to an enemy in time of war. We're in a declared war. Our leaders have given not just aid and comfort, but thousands of storm rifles to our enemy during this war, which the enemy used to slaughter thousands of Mexicans and also some Americans to justify disarming us. It really doesn't get more treasonous than that. What Obama and Holder did was not only treason, it was international terrorism, according to Title 22, U.S. Code 2656F sub D. Go to the CIA's website, that's cia.gov, and you can get the CIA's definition of terrorism, which is, quote, "The term terrorism means premeditated, politically motivated violence perpetrated against non-combatant targets by clandestine agents or groups." It continues, "The term international terrorism means terrorism involving the territory or the citizens of more than one country," unquote. Does that sound like Fast and Furious to you? I know, it also sounds like Panama, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, and on and on. Tonight, though, we're just talking about gun control. But how revolting is it that these animals would provide storm rifles, which they bought with TARP bailout money, to the most sadistic head-chopping murderers in Mexico, with orders to mow down thousands of Mexicans merely to justify the annulment of the Second Amendment. These guys are really playing with fire in a desperate attempt to disarm us. They, along with the narco-assassins, are remorseless killers. I have another definition of treason. Gun control is treason. Excuse me. Anyone and everyone in the gun confiscation food chain is a traitor to the people and the country, from the very top to the very bottom. We all know what the penalty for treason is. Anyone who would disarm us, take away our ability to defend ourselves, is our deadly enemy. It doesn't matter what his or her excuse is. It's an act of war against us. There's no legal or procedural method to stop a gun grabber. The official gun grabber, who means to strip you defenseless, can only be stopped with a gun. He's the most dangerous enemy we have because he's got a license to kill us. The license is good for any reason or for no reason at all. In Indiana, it's illegal to try to stop an official home invasion, even if there's no warrant, even if they got the wrong house. I doubt this law will last long, along with the judge who dreamed it up. The best cure for official warrantless home invasions is about 5 rounds of buckshot zinging down the hallway as they storm in, screaming obscenities and pounding on the walls. The fun and excitement will leak out of that sort of thing very quickly. This is America. America was founded in violence, and it runs on violence. The colonists tried for decades to obtain in a peaceful manner their freedom from the vicious, greedy English dictatorship. It was impossible. Change and freedom could only be obtained through violent revolution. The violent nature of America will never change. The bad guys always have guns. It's a fact of life. The worst guys have some of the most impressive guns. We know this because we paid for them. I'm talking about government gunmen. It is our sacred duty to defend ourselves and our loved ones from government gunmen who are at this very moment planning and devising ways to strip us defenseless and put us someplace where we're never heard from again. We might ask ourselves what these remorseless traitors have in store for us that first requires us to be disarmed. We've seen what they've done to others at Abu Ghraib, Bagram, Guantanamo, and in secret CIA torture centers all around the world. CIA and Army whistleblowers are being sent to prison for trying to warn us what is in store for opponents of the American warlords. Does anyone think we can trust torturers to be nice to us after we hand over our guns to them? We normal, decent Americans already have the necessary equipment to defend ourselves from government gunmen who want to disarm us. We've got all the guns we need. Ammunition is another matter. The current shortage of ammunition is a serious development. A first step is to encourage manufacturers to sell only to American civilians and not to the Department of Homeland Security or any agency of the federal government. These agencies are deliberately creating ammo shortages with their insane orders for billions of rounds. After all, we're paying the bills, so the ammo needs to go to us, the actual owners. Okay, so the subject tonight is gun control in our county. How should we respond if Feinstein's bill or something like it, an executive order by Obama, becomes law? Obviously, we will ignore it and continue to trade among ourselves and with others, other like-minded Americans. But what if confiscation becomes law? At that point, we start making changes. We, the ones who pay the bills, take over the law. Our law will become what used to be known as frontier justice. Attempts at confiscation will receive the death penalty. We have no choice in this life and death matter. Anyone who would disarm us is our deadly enemy and must be put to death. We will not try to hide behind elected officials. We are responsible for everything, especially including our self-defense. We here in the county cannot expect a sheriff and a handful of deputies to fight federal gun grabbers for us, which is a preposterous idea. The sheriff and his deputies can certainly help us and are expected to do so. But we will take full responsibility for defending ourselves. We need to have secure communications with each other that will continue to function if cell towers or generators are turned off by man or nature. We must develop a standard procedure of immediate action in the event any county resident is attacked by gun grabbers. This is the essence of our new Neighborhood Watch program, our readiness to defend our fellow residents from federal attackers. This will also apply to any attempt at police or military roadblocks in our county. Travel is not a privilege, it is a natural right. Roadblocks will not be allowed to exist. There will also be no TSA or DHS aggression allowed or tolerated in the county. We now know that drones have been used against us here in the valley, so we encourage the shooting down of these dangerous weapons at the first opportunity. Look up when you hear something overhead. We learned in the Rhodesian War that the safest way to travel through terrorist-infested areas was to have a convoy of at least two vehicles, several hundred yards apart. It will certainly come to that in many parts of America, but we must begin thinking in these terms even in our own county. That concluded my prepared remarks.
I would have stood up and given you a standing ovation. Is that what happened?
That's not what happened. I think the people were rather stunned by what I said. They just didn't know what to think. Some of them really liked it, I think. They came up and congratulated me, but a lot of them were just totally taken aback, including the sheriff.
And you attribute this to indoctrination and brainwashing. And not the kind that is done in some institution, but the kind that people readily accept by watching TV and by believing in what the politicians tell them, even though we've known for decades that the politicians always lie.
Yeah, we got this state of paralysis, and the preppers here were very appreciative. They said, you know, we're so glad, because we haven't been here that long. We've been here just over 2 years. And I felt a little presumptuous talking for the county as a new guy. But, I mean, if we got a sheriff from New York, you know, what's the worst that could happen?
Sure.
But I noticed that not just here, but throughout the country, there's a lot of paralysis from the mind control and conditioning that you just described. And this was a kick in the pants for people, and they just kind of like, they woke up. And, wow, this guy's right, you know, this is great. We should have been thinking along these terms. But sometimes it takes just an extra effort to wake us up, because we're, as you say, I mean, we're asleep. This country is really asleep in most places.
Right. I think maybe I hope that you provoke people to start thinking about this, because this is a very, very provocative presentation, and hopefully it made people start to think and look around and take stock of what they believe.
Yeah, it spurred. We're going to have a meeting when I get back from my work. And we're going to have a big meeting on communications and procedures, because it did have a good invigorating effect on the preppers. So that was good. The
Great.
Regular people, we don't know yet. But
amazing.
Yeah, it's always going to be done by a relative minority. Anything important gets done by minorities. So.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. And I think that minorities have proven in other ethnic groups who are a minority. It's unification, is getting together. And even if you're, 2%, I'm sure you know which group that I'm talking about, even if you're only 2% of the population who are going against the government, it can be very valid, because if you're unified and you have strength, even in small numbers, I believe you can be very effective.
Yeah, I mean, our revolution was conducted by, they estimate, 5% or less of the population, not the fighters, but the whole support system.
Right.
Probably about 5%. So, yeah, you don't need majority rule or anything. You can get stuff done.
Sure.
If you're with us and the brains to do it. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad that you're going to have another meeting and that you seem to have started something in that county. And I applaud you certainly for your efforts in doing this. And I think that with all the stuff that's going on in the country today, I think people, if they're even looking or even thinking about this, I hope they don't get involved in the emotion. And I note that most of the events, the shooting events, have to do with children. And it's such an emotional kind of thing. What person wouldn't feel bad if they thought that a child was harmed? But you have to overlook that emotion, and you have to really look and see what is going on, and recognize that this is an out-of-control government, and as you pointed out, all of the legislation that followed 9/11 certainly has led up to where we are today. And this has been a very speedy process when you think about it. Look at all of the stuff that has happened since 9/11. Oh, my gosh. Amazing. All the warfare in foreign countries, all of the legislation imposed on this country, as you bring up, the TSA, the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, we're talking about big departments. And then when you couple that with Obamacare, phew, gosh, talk about communism, it's here. We don't have to wait for the New World Order to arrive. It is already here. And probably has been for a good long time. The only thing that is preventing it from taking effect right now is the fact that there are a lot of us who own guns.
That's the truth. That's the only thing that's stopping it. And it sounds hackneyed or cliched, but this is number one sticking point for a government. Always has been. They thought... I'm sure the psychiatrists and psychologists that work for the government have pretty well come to the agreement that there's no way to physically disarm. I don't want to split my infinitives. There's no way physically to disarm the country. But all the things we're seeing that you mentioned and the ennui or paralysis that I was talking about are the result of brainwashing and conditioned response. Very scientifically done, and the fear of looking as if you're sympathizing with the Muslims or the terrorists.
Right.
And this is the substitute disarmament program. I've told the people at the meeting. Because there were quite a few questions, I must say, and the questions were probably even, the answers may have been as interesting as this presentation, but I related that some smart aleck wrote me one time and said, I don't get it. How does a guy like Brandon Robb, an ex-Marine, get picked up and put in a psych ward for innocuous statements, and you, Mr. Campbell, are still at large? I don't understand that. Well, I said, I think here's the answer. Brandon Robb, although he's an ex-Marine, he doesn't own a gun. Now, I said, this may sound crazy for an ex-Marine not to own a gun. I said, maybe Brandon Robb had a belly full of guns after what he did for our government in Afghanistan and Iraq. Maybe he never wants to see a gun again as long as he lives. But that's not the case with me. And I think that's the main difference of why I'm not under arrest and he was. But that's just a guess on my part.
Mm-hmm.
And that was from what happened at Waco. You know,
yes.
I must say that Waco, the people at Waco, I don't understand. I don't understand what they were doing there. I don't know what the motive was, what the drive was to be there, but there they were, and they made their, you know, some of the spending money for the retreat or whatever you call that situation they had there. They put M or AR-15 rifles together and would sell them at, you know, legally at gun shows in Texas. In fact, a guy named Paul Fatta, F-A-T-T-A, he was at the Houston gun show, I believe, that day, selling a lot of their surplus AR-15s. But those people, when the ATF stormed the place, intending to kill them, I mean, that's come out. They thought they were going to be in prayer at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's what their informant told them, Rodriguez, told them that they should be in prayer. Rodriguez, I think, also told the people inside. And that's why they weren't in prayer. They were passing out AR-15s and other guns. And they returned fire. And we don't know who killed who, but four ATFs were dead, and I don't know how many were seriously wounded. So much so that the ATF had to raise its hands and surrender and ask if they could come get their dead and wounded. The people inside foolishly allowed this to happen. You know, now that we see in hindsight what actually happened to them later, 51 days later, they should have killed them all, obviously. What would have been the point of anything else? These people intended to kill them. You know, the ATF at the time had a scandal in the agency. The male ATFs were sexually harassing the females severely, brutally, and it was out of control. They were animals out of control. And this raid on the Waco church was an attempt to distract Washington from its sex crimes. That's what we're up against. That's the mentality that we're up against in this country.
Right.
So we owe everything. We owe everything to the Waco martyrs. Whatever we think of them and their ideas, they fought. They killed. And they died, but they made our lives a lot more valuable because now the government hesitates. It doesn't think it's going to be a cakewalk. That scared them. That really scared the government. They can't.
Do you feel that happened, that they are a little bit more reticent to go against a group?
Absolutely. That was a shock. That was like a cold shower for the government. They never expected it. I don't know if you've seen the movie that Mike McNulty put together and some others called, whatever it was called, about Waco, A New Revelation, the Waco A New Revelation. And there's film, there's video of these animals lounging around in the attack, in the area away from the attack zone, lounging around, getting fed and watered and taking naps. One of them says on the film, because the person with the camera is also an ATF, said, "Oh, you look like a tough guy." And he was snoozing in the back of a Humvee. Yeah, he says, "I'm honed to a fine edge, honed to kill."
Oh,
they're
my
laughing.
Gosh.
Oh, yeah. And you can see in Waco, A New Revelation, I think it's online for free. It's using the forward-looking infrared, the FLIR cameras. We're in the helicopters going overhead during the massacre 51 days later. and all the Delta Force assassins, army assassins that were shooting full automatic weapons into the church while the flames were roaring up. People were trying to get out, and they just shot them from outside. You can see all the gun flashes because it's a forward-looking infrared, and it captures the heat from the muzzle blast.
And you can see I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
And where was all the sympathy and the feelings that people are talking about with regards to Sandy Hook? Where was all the sympathy for the children that died at Waco? We didn't have anybody going around the country saying, "Hey, we've got to get the ATF to stand down. We've got to do this for the ATF, against the ATF. We cannot have this kind of terrorism going on in our country. It's okay if the government does this, right? But if a citizen or a patsy, and I understand that Adam Lanza was actually dead the day before." See the difference in the treatment of these two events. I mean, that was an out-and-out slaughter. They knew children were there, and to plan it when they know that these people would be at prayer. And I think you can compare it to other things that have happened, other acts of terrorism. You can even compare that to the USS Liberty. Where was all the media coverage on the USS Liberty? Well, this is selective attention. When you consider that that was a terrorist attack against America by a foreign government, and you've mentioned foreign entities in your presentation, so I guess it's okay for some things, some events, and not okay for others. It's okay for the government to have guns, and it's okay for the criminals to have guns, but the people who don't commit crimes, who simply want to have protection against some kind of crime from happening to them, those are the people that are actually being subjected to confiscation. That ticks me off.
Yeah, their use of the nomenclature that they use, like I said, the Department of Homeland Security has put out a request for proposal for 7,000 real storm rifles, full auto.
Right.
Very short barreled. But they said that these are really excellent for personal defense weapons. Oh, no kidding. But when we want them, they're called assault weapons and
right.
Illegal. So what's, that's crazy.
Right.
We'll just ignore this nonsense. And assault weapons ban, believe me, when the last one was on, that's when I got all my machine guns. The bans mean nothing. You can get anything you want if you want it bad enough in this country.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
It's very interesting how they use emotion. And I can understand how it works. I remember when I went to see the film Blood Diamond, and going through that film and seeing all of these people slaughtered for a piece of, it's not glass, but something that really is only valuable because somebody puts that value on it. But to have all these people slaughtered, that on the way out, I all but took off my diamond ring and gave it to the attendant. They pass out. Pass out candy. And now we have people going to meetings where they're talking about guns. And then immediately after, these people are offered the opportunity to hand in their guns, that they'll get money for turning in their guns. Now, they had a couple of years ago in the Chicago area, they had the priest and pastors of churches in Chicago asking the parishioners to turn in their guns, that they would get $50 or a fee for turning in their guns. And, they use emotion, and it does work, because honestly, I felt like taking off my diamond. I mean, I'm glad I didn't, but that's how filled with emotion I was at seeing this presentation. That's what
I
felt
thought
like
that was
doing.
I thought that was a great movie, just because I never dreamed Leonardo DiCaprio could could capture that accent that he did. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, that was pretty good. He
I mean,
was pretty
that's
good.
where I worked for 2 years with those guys in Rhodesia, and he played a South African who grew up in Rhodesia. And I don't know how that guy did that accent. I mean, that was spot on. I was there for 2 years. I couldn't dream of doing something like that.
I guess
Yeah, that
that's why
guy's
he's an
talented.
actor and getting those big
Yeah,
bucks, right?
he is talented, I'll tell you.
Well, I think that your presentation was really remarkable, and I think you're right. It's probably one of the best things that you've written. Although I say that after reading a lot of your work, I think, wow, that is really great. So I hope that you can keep producing this kind of work that you can help people to understand what the situation is.
I don't know. I think I'll retire with this one. I'm not going to be able to top this one.
Oh, that's what I always think. I always think, oh, I'm not going to do anything more. But you know, people like you, you're never going to retire. You're going to keep doing this till they retire you
This
permanently.
is true. This is true. I'll be
Yeah.
here forever, or
Yeah.
at least till next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the program today. And again, your website is jbcampbellextremismonline.com, and there's a link to the radio schedule page. This is a special interview, and I thank you very much. And give Robbie my best, and tell her to take care. And I know that you're probably very grateful to have her support, and that's a wonderful thing.
Well, I told the people at the meeting, I said, Robbie's in charge of all bright ideas that come out of this house. So, yeah, I'm very grateful.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you so very, very much.
Anytime, Deanna.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.